You've probably seen these headlines. 50,000 employees laid off by Microsoft, Amazon, Meta, and Google. Over 50% of Twitter employees laid off by Elon Musk in one day. But it's not just layoff news that's hitting the headlines. It's also new terms and trends that define the power struggle in corporate America. On the employee side, we have terms like quiet quitting, career cushioning, and malicious compliance. And on the employer side, we have terms like worker hoarding and quiet hiring. So in this episode, we'll break down what these terms mean and talk about the power struggle between employer and employee in corporate America. We'll also talk about the role that social media plays in our relationship with labor and autonomy.
Welcome back to Bamboo and Glass, where we show you the power of one more perspective. We like to talk about career, mental health, relationships, and many more topics, and we love to share new episodes every Sunday on every podcasting platform. You can also find us on Instagram, TikTok, and we recently started a Substack where you can subscribe to that, and all of those links will be in the show notes below. Speaking of show notes, we also have included a list of a couple of past episodes because we've been having a lot of conversations lately about career. For example, navigating a career change, overcoming imposter syndrome, figuring out if your dream career is all that you dreamed it would be, and also understanding the enormous challenges that immigrants and H-1B visa holders experience in their careers in the U.S. Today, we want to take a step back and explore some broad trends that are happening across multiple industries. We have a couple of terms that are starting to pop up on the employee side, so let's break down some of those trends. They include quiet quitting, career cushioning, and malicious compliance. Quick disclaimer that we're not necessarily endorsing any particular actions. We are just kind of observing what's been happening in our workplaces and on social media sites like TikTok and Blind. And we're also, most of the time, going to be speaking from our experience in tech as one specific industry and would love to see how these concepts play out beyond tech. So Sophia, can you introduce some of these terms for us?
Yes, the first one I want to talk about is quiet quitting. So I'm going to share a lot of perspectives that people have been having, either employees, employers, journalists, and I'm really curious to get your reaction and which perspectives you agree with the most. So quiet quitting, this actually started from a TikTok video in which the person said, quiet quitting is when you're not outright quitting your job, but you're quitting the idea of going above and beyond. You're still performing your duties, but you're no longer subscribing to the hustle culture mentality that work has to be your entire life. Quiet quitting is interesting because this concept and this movement was really driven by a lot of the same underlying factors as actual resignations, but quiet quitting just refers to opting out of tasks beyond your assigned duties or just being less psychologically invested in work. So a lot of people who identify as quiet quitters, they will continue to fulfill their main responsibilities, but they're just not going to do what's called citizenship behaviors, which is like staying late to perform that you're really involved and invested, or showing up early, or going to non-mandatory meetings that people just feel an obligation to go to. So at first glance, this is like, okay, an interesting term, because these employees, it's not like they're purposefully doing poorly at their job. They're just not going to go above and beyond. But for a lot of companies, they are worried because they're like, shoot, we really liked it when people felt an obligation to go above and beyond because that kind of pressured other people to also go above and beyond. So that's a little bit of the definition of quiet quitting and how it started, and I'll share some criticism of the term. So one criticism is that the word quitting is bad, and this term is harmful because it sets the expectation that attaching your identity to your job and working above and beyond is what's expected, and doing anything less than your 120% is considered quitting. It also is harmful because it gives employers an out. It absolves them of accountability. Employers can just say like, oh, it's not my fault that I'm setting a bad culture. It's like the employees, they are just lazy. They just don't want to work anymore. So that's just like a quick overview of the discussions around quiet quitting. How have you heard the term used? What do you think of the term quiet quitting? Just want your reaction to all that.
I've mainly heard the term quiet quitting over social media, so with a lot of TikTok accounts, and clearly by the sheer number of TikToks that have popped up, just even having the words quiet quitting on their thumbnails just shows how much of a movement this has become. I have not heard of the term quiet quitting from necessarily any coworkers or people I've worked with. And actually, I think in many ways, the workplace that I'm at now is a startup. And so there is not necessarily an expectation to go above and beyond, but I can totally see how culturally people are just naturally invested in the company's success, because the company's success, especially when it's a startup, can oftentimes correlate to your own success, whether it's monetary value, getting more responsibilities and exciting projects and partnerships. So I went into my job being a little bit worried about what if I let my career or this job become the number one priority again. But I think in some ways it is really helpful to actually realize that after a couple of years out of college now, it's more realistic to find other coworkers who don't prioritize their job too. And so I don't think they've needed to go to the extent of saying quiet quitting. I don't know how exactly they got to this place of knowing that there's a lot of other priorities in their lives other than their job. So I think being in that environment, while these people are also really invested in the work and the company, they have a really healthy balance, I think, with prioritizing other things outside of work. And so I have luckily not felt pressure. It's been definitely way more of the psychological self-inflicted aspect. I'm curious if you relate to that at all, or if you feel like there was actually external pressure.
Initially, I was a little afraid to tone back my emotional investment because I worried that it would just put more emotional labor on other people on my team. And actually, that is one criticism of this whole movement, because some journalists or sociologists are saying, hey, have you thought about how it would be selfish to not be super emotionally invested in your work? And actually, NPR did an interesting survey where they asked readers what term they preferred instead of quiet quitting, because, you know, the quitting part kind of is a little bit controversial. And some of the things that people submitted were reverse hustle, or acting your wage, which I thought it was funny, or workforce disassociation. That one is interesting. It's just like disconnecting your emotions, but maybe still doing your work.
I think there's a reason why quitting is a very attractive and sensational word. I think we all have seen a lot of those TikToks or Facebook posts where someone says, I quit my job. Pairing quiet and quitting is definitely a very smart alliteration. And I understand why, out of all of these other suggestions, I understand why quiet quitting, if that was the first term to come about, why it would be a very popular one that people would want to, that people would pick up really quickly.
For sure. So that's a little bit of overview of quiet quitting. The next term I want to talk about is career cushioning. Have you ever heard this term?
No. So I'm excited because you, I don't know what side of TikTok you're on, but you're hearing much more interesting terms than I have.
I just go digging for it. I've been really interested in this power dynamic and how people are asserting power in the small pockets of opportunity that they have. So career cushioning. So the context is that recently a lot of tech companies have been rescinding jobs very last minute. Let's say I'm Google and I give you a job plan and I'm like, okay, you can start your job in 3 months. And then last minute, Google, I'm doing layoffs. I'm laying off my recruiters. I'm laying off a bunch of teams and I don't have a job for you anymore. So because this is happening, I've been seeing a lot of tech employees only give 2 to 3 days notice that they're leaving their job. And this is in contrast to conventionally, people give 10 days or like 10 work days of notice. You want to wait till the very, very last minute to hopefully guarantee or feel more confidence that your next job is going to still be there for you, because you don't want to quit your previous job, burn that bridge, and then, oh crap, like this next job isn't actually available for you anymore. And so one of the reasons this is happening is that when these tech companies are doing layoffs, their recruiting teams are being laid off first. And so when the recruiting teams are being laid off, it becomes even harder to communicate with your next company and to ensure that your job is still available. These employees would rather just hold on to the very last minute to try to ensure that they're leaving for a job that's definitely going to exist. So that is career cushioning. I think this is a really practical thing to do. I was doing a job transition, and after learning about this term, that did impact the timeline that I gave to my employer. So I'm glad I came across this.
I'm thinking about times when I have also given notice that I'm leaving. I actually told my manager 3 months in advance that I was going to be leaving. And for those 3 months, he like tried to convince me to stay the whole time. I think something I really appreciate about this, and I think this is more of like a sentimental, emotional aspect of it, is that I feel like when you leave, that's when you kind of get showered with the most number of affirmations. Yes. And so I kind of actually liked giving my notice earlier so that I have more of an opportunity to like give one last good impression, like grab that coffee, that Zoom chat with a coworker, and hand off like email info and stuff and contact info before I fully leave. But I also agree that this is very practical. I just know realistically for me, I'm already thinking about like what the heck I'm going to say like months in advance already. And so I will probably every single day up until the 2 to 3 days notice think, should I tell him today? Should I tell him today? Should I tell him today? And I don't really like how much headspace that takes up for me. Another reason why I did give that early notice at the time was because I did want them to have the time to reprioritize and also open up headcount if that was something that would be a possibility that they can explore. When we're talking about career cushioning, it makes me think about how normally this would be frowned upon culturally because we're kind of taking advantage of the company or we are not giving them very much wiggle room to make do with their OKRs or whatever. But in my opinion, a company is a faceless entity. And I think at that point, it really just depends on how you feel too about the people on your team. And it's really difficult to balance that with the very real possibility that whatever job maybe you are hoping to go to might not actually be there if you wait too long.
Yeah, I think it's important to be considerate, but this is a really dire situation where I really could lose that next job. And so companies have very powerful HR legal teams and companies always...
They'll find a way, yeah.
I'm not saying managers like individual people, but I'm saying like companies as entities.
Yeah.
They can find a way. They have a lot of legal protection to get things done. But as an individual, there's no promise that that next job is going to exist. So
absolutely.
I would put myself first in
this
situation.
Yeah. Okay, what is malicious compliance?
Yes, malicious compliance is the most interesting word here. Okay, so it was coined by this TikToker whose name is Speech Prof. Malicious compliance is doing what's in your power at work to make people's lives a little bit better, especially if it comes at a cost to the corporation you work for. So in the words of Speech Prof, they said, use whatever power you have in your role to do random acts of kindness for people because you don't care if you get in trouble for it. So here are some examples. You are a customer service associate and you give a customer a massive discount as an act of corporate defiance, or you waive an overdraft fee, or you upsize a customer's food, or you let a customer return an item even though they're a couple days late. Or maybe if you're a middle manager, you just approve everyone's time off request. I just think the term, again, malicious compliance is so amusing because it's these are very contrasting words. Mm-hmm. I also was going on TikTok and doing some research about how this movement started. And I found this creator, her name is Essence Gibbs, and she explains why she started doing malicious compliance. During her 18th month tenure, she claimed that the store's upper management often shorted or delayed her biweekly paychecks without any explanation. What's more, she said special perks and allowances were given to employees who were close to the boss. So Gibbs decided to take matters into her own hands. But rather than doing the bare minimum on the sales floor or quitting her job altogether, so rather than doing quiet quitting, she chose to kill the company with kindness. Kindness aimed at benefiting customers, but not the company's profits. She said, the managers at the job treated us horribly, so I gave one customer 50% off a pair of $110 Air Force Jordans. She also said, they mess with our money by putting payroll in late, so I'd mess with theirs by using a special discount code to help out a customer. And she said, I did feel a little guilty, but my managers did not respect me, so I found ways to put a smile on my own face. And so I wanted to talk about this term because I think it's such an interesting example of the employee trying to find any power they have in the situation. And it's in many ways the opposite of quiet quitting, because quiet quitting is reducing the effort and heart that you put into work. But malicious compliance is going above and beyond. But instead of above and beyond for your company, you're going above and beyond to help real people. And you're being just really overly accommodating to customers at the cost of your employer who you're mad at. So yeah, any reactions to this?
I think overall, luckily, my workplaces have always had people who they were never like on any similar level to these managers, for example, who treated Esther really horribly. And I think they are also people who also are happy to take advantage of, you know, the benefits or the perks or the things that would technically hurt the company. And I think it's, again, companies have cushion. They have a way to bounce back, and they're always going to be able to do something about it, especially if they've been well established. Hopefully you do feel like you can give back to people. And if your job is not letting you do that, and that also makes you feel a certain type of way, then you're more than entitled to make those changes yourself and act on your, go rogue, be a pioneer. I'm curious if you've ever taken a similar action to Esther Gibbs, like whether it was giving someone advice that your company may have not wanted you to give advice around, or other examples that you had given to.
I was really thinking of examples in the retail industry, but that's a good example. I like that example of me giving advice, because that is a way to kind of distribute my power and resources a little bit. It's just giving people a bit of an inside look into the interviewing process.
Another example is referrals. I've been told by some people that it's better to have an honor code system for yourself of like only recommending the people that you really can vouch for and vet for and is worth the company's time. My perspective is that I would actually prefer to give as many people a referral as possible. Like, there's so many reasons as to why I maybe haven't worked with you before and I don't have a first person perspective on what you do, but that shouldn't disqualify you from being able to show up to an interview and really prove your abilities and whatnot. So, a lot of times there's those company incentives of if a referral that you put in gets the job, then you get a bonus. And I'm like, why would you not take advantage of that? Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. I'm curious how you do referrals yourself.
I am also very open to writing referrals. If I know you, obviously I have a lot more I could say. If I don't know you, I'll definitely still put in the referral. I just honestly don't have as much to say.
Yeah. And you can always say in the like text box or whatever, like, I've never worked with this person, but here's your name. And if that is one step that can get a really genuinely good candidate into the interviews, then I think that's totally worth it.
Totally. And I think the people who I don't know who I end up referring, they're people who have the guts to reach out to me and they're proactive in reaching out to me. And I mean, I'm not saying that that necessarily means everyone should give them a referral, but it's like, there are plenty of people who have a foot in the door for less legit reasons. So I'm happy to support someone in their journey. And it's like, they have to pass the interview anyway. So it's not like I'm giving them a totally free pass in handing them a job.
Yeah. I will say this question actually came up in ethics in my film school. Definitely that's where like industry differences exist, because a lot of industries are not like tech in that they don't do very meticulous, thorough, aggressive interview processes. Like, I think it's normal in tech for you to do at least 5 interviews a lot of the time. And most other places might only have time for 1 because they're strapped on resources and whatnot. And so that is a situation where your recommendation, like your word, is actually really, really valued. And that's an industry that I would be a lot more hesitant to immediately jump to refer someone. So,
good point. I'm glad you pointed out those industry differences.
So we talked about employee terms, related terms. Mm-hmm. What about terms that employers are also kind of taking on and are kind of becoming hot terms in the news? The first one you've mentioned is labor hoarding.
Yes. So labor hoarding is holding on to more employees than you might need. And this seems to be more relevant in businesses like restaurants, retail, and a little bit less in tech. And so why is this happening? So during the pandemic, a lot of people were laid off, but a lot of people also chose to leave their jobs because, one, maybe you're like, oh, it's the pandemic. My company is not treating employees with empathy. I have enough money, so screw it. I'm quitting. And people leave. Or, oh, it's the pandemic, life is so short, and my family and my hobbies matter more, I'm quitting. Or, ooh, it's the pandemic, I'm overworked, and now so many of my colleagues are sick and they've quit, and you know, I'd rather just work for myself than for a corporation. So because there were so many people laid off, people who chose to leave, a lot of these restaurants lost people who were really knowledgeable and could contribute to the business. And hiring and training is really expensive, it's really time consuming, and these companies just started holding on to more people than they think they need because it's cheaper to hold on to them and pay them, even if you don't really need them to work all 8 hours, than to fire them and then have to risk other people also leaving. And now you're suddenly down 2 or 3 people more than you originally thought you were going to be down. Another reason I've been hearing about labor hoarding, but in tech specifically, is that tech companies sometimes hold on to talented employees and hope that the talented employees don't have the guts to quit, so that these employees are not available to competitors who are working on the same thing. And so I also thought that was like a pretty interesting, like, protective measure. And so this is just labor hoarding, and it's one way for employers to try to retain talent and be productive in as cheap and low risk of a way as possible. And on the other side, related term is quiet hiring. So this is when companies need people with certain skills, but instead of hiring a new full-time employee, they either create contract positions, which mean it's a part-time position that's only maybe like 6 or 12 months, or instead of hiring new people, they will ask existing employees to shift their responsibilities or increase their responsibilities. Quiet hiring as a trend is toughest for people who are looking for a job and looking for an in into a job, because now fewer full-time jobs are available. However, I think that there actually can be some benefits of quiet hiring from the employee side. I'm just speaking really optimistically as someone who has actually voluntarily opted into quiet hiring without even really knowing it. One, I think quiet hiring can lead to fewer layoffs, because instead of eliminating a role, you keep that person and you just ask that person to shift their responsibility a little bit. So for example, I actually see a lot of tech recruiters advocate for quiet hiring on LinkedIn. And so they'll say, as a tech recruiter, I know this business really well. I'm kind of in a salesy job. I'm very client facing. I know how to work with customers. And so don't lay me off, just transition me into a sales job. And also, I think quiet hiring can benefit employees in that if you are someone who's looking to expand your skill set or make a career transition, you can gradually take on new responsibilities without the long process of interviewing externally and doing a really formal interview. And this actually can be a really good way to learn new skills. I've actually gotten to try out a lot of different roles just by proactively, quote unquote, quiet hiring, you know, before I even knew that term existed. So yeah, what is your reaction to quiet hiring? Is the opportunity to learn new skills in your current job something that you would value?
I would definitely agree. I would value getting to learn other skills, but I think it's a question of, is it a pure shift where you get to offboard from like some work in your old role while getting to add on some new responsibility, or is it only adding on new responsibilities?
Good question.
Which, you know, I think is always kind of hazy. And what's also kind of tricky is that even the words and terms that are used to describe the role that they're in is tricky. I feel like at a lot of big companies, they have already kind of established like these ladders and these ways that you can navigate across the ladders and stuff. And so if, let's say, a software engineer was interested in sales and they did get the opportunity to do sales, like, would the company actually go forward in changing the role's name for them to better reflect those responsibilities? Because especially if they want to move to a sales thing, oftentimes recruiters in whatever companies that they're looking at that next, they're going to not see sales immediately. Like, that's not in the title. They're just going to see software engineer. So I think there's a lot of considerations to happen where I feel like it's less of a problem oftentimes for employees to actually do more work than they had expected. I think what's trickier is getting acknowledged for that work, actually. And as for contract positions, I think it's definitely much more difficult for freelancers. And it's interesting because both of these pathways are kind of in a way contradictory to each other, because there could totally be a contract position that could have been created depending on what direction the company wanted to go. But let's say they actually decided, oh, this contract position isn't worth onboarding a whole new person. Like, we should just tack it onto another role. So I feel like there ends up being a lot of questions to be answered for the employees. And I see how it's sneaky for companies to quiet hire.
Yeah, this is probably my favorite term of our entire episode, because I think it's the most nuanced and the most
I don't know, it's
complex.
Kind of the most shady too.
Lots
and
of pros,
it's the most innocuous
cons.
Term too.
Yes, you're like, oh, quiet that's
hiring.
Nice hiring, that's a great word, but quiet hiring together, is that a good term?
Definitely.
Okay, it's been so fun to share what I've been learning about these workplace trends and this power struggle. I wanted to end by talking a little bit about the recent layoffs in big tech I've been observing and share some predictions about what I think is going to happen next. What I find quite interesting about the recent layoffs, and I'm going to speak from my experience with friends in big tech like Google, Meta, Microsoft, etc., is that a lot of layoffs seem seem really random, and it's unclear why someone who is consistently such a high performer and, you know, regarded so highly by all their colleagues, why they are being laid off. And another trend is that you see people, even if they're really, really loyal to the company, they are not protected. They are not immune from layoffs. I've seen so many LinkedIn posts where people are like, I've been at this company for 20 years or 25 years, and I was just laid off with no warning. I didn't realize this, but there are some people who actually don't have a personal computer because they just use their work computer for everything, and they just lose access to their computer instantly. They don't get to say goodbye. They don't get to keep their personal files. And there's a lot of reasons for it. It's like a lot of these companies have a lot of private data. So even if there's one bad actor who has access and shares the data, the company stock could tank. You know, I get it from like a legal perspective, but it's sad. And I mentioned the randomness because I've seen that the randomness actually makes a lot of people work less hard and care less. The idea is that decisions about layoffs have already been made. And if my efforts aren't going to help me stay noticed and help me stay employed, why try? People who need H-1B visa sponsorship probably see their job and differently, but a lot of people who do not need to rely on employer to legally stay in the country, a lot of people, I can just see them giving a big F you to their employer. I think what's going to happen is like tech salaries are now going to be a race to the bottom, not a race to the top. Employers have much more power now. And so employers know that a lot of talented people are all going for the same job. So the employer can be like, screw you. Don't even try negotiating. I'm not going to give you a better salary. I'm also wondering if there's going to be less interest in people pivoting into tech, because clearly tech is not immune to layoffs. I'm also interested to see what impact this will have on higher education in the next few years. Because of the pandemic, I think people had maybe lower quality of higher education. And so why pay for something so expensive? Adding on top of that, the tech jobs, which were previously so lucrative, they're now unstable. And so I'm curious, like, are people still going to be going to college and studying computer science, or are they going to pivot to other industries? I just can't wait to see how this all unfolds. So this has been so fun to get to chat with you about what I've been seeing and get your reaction to it. Always interesting to get your tech and media take. And to our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. If you found any part of this episode interesting, if you have been talking about this topic with your colleagues, please share this with them. I think this would be a really great starting point for further conversation. And let your friends know that we are on every podcasting platform and we share new episodes every Sunday. And if you're looking for more conversations about career, like navigating career change, overcoming imposter syndrome, figuring out if your dream career is all that you want it to be, learning what it's like to be an immigrant in the US, especially during these layoffs. We've linked a lot more episodes in the description below that you can check out right after this. And if you have any questions or feedback, let us know. DM us on Instagram @BambooGlass, and we will see you next Sunday. Bye.